KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. If you break it down, there's one question at the center of James Redford's documentary film, Paper Tigers. Why are some kids successful in school and life and others aren't? The film is a profile of an alternative high school in Walla Walla, Washington. It follows six students over the course of a year. And these are young people who have difficult home lives, poverty, addiction, neglect. The school doesn't provide any easy answers to that question, by the way, but it does come at the problem with a different approach. Rather than ratcheting up the discipline, it takes into account the effect of stress, toxic stress on these kids' brains, their ability to focus and learn and get along with others. We're continuing our documentary series today. Redford will join us to talk about Paper Tigers after the news.
Hey, I'm Elaine Clark, one of the producers for Radio West, inviting you to check out Video West. It's our online showcase of short documentaries about the places and people that make Utah what it is. You can stream the films at videowest.kuer.org, and if you like what you see and hear, we hope you'll share it with your friends. And thanks.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. In Jamie Redford's new documentary film, one of the teachers at this alternative high school he's profiling nicely sums up what the film is really about. He says, a kid's behavior isn't the kid. It's a symptom of their life. The film is called Paper Tigers, and in it, Redford follows six students over the course of a year at Lincoln High School. These are young people who have difficult home lives, and all of them have had traumatic experiences that naturally come along with poverty and addiction and neglect. And all of them act out from time to time, cutting class and getting in fights and flunking and just generally checking out of life. But Lincoln is one of a handful of schools in the country to try out a new model of education. As opposed to a punitive model for dealing with bad behavior, this approach takes into account what their home life is doing to these kids' brains, creating a constant feeling of stress, it turns out. And the film points out that a person with a traumatic childhood is seven times more likely to end up in prison, has double the risk of cancer and stroke, and is 12 times more likely to commit suicide. On Wednesday night, we're going to be screening Redford's film. He's going to be joining us for a Q&A after it. Today, though, on the program, he's joining us to talk about it, and we invite you to join the conversation. 801-585-WEST is the number, 801-585-9378, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Jamie Redford has written, produced, and directed numerous films and television projects. Paper Tigers is his latest documentary film. And as I mentioned, we're screening it on Wednesday night. It's our partnership with the Utah Film Center, and we'll give you details about that as we go along. Redford is joining us today from a studio in Marin County, California, where he's based. And Jamie Redford, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I guess we should begin with the most basics. So how is it that you learned about Lincoln High School? And we should point out this is in Walla Walla, Washington. How did you learn find out about this school?
Well, the origins were on my last film about dyslexia that I did with my producing partner, Karen Pritzker, in which the core realization that there are the roots of dyslexia are neurological and linked to solid science was an important part of communicating why we have to have a better understanding of how different learners process information. And it was the core of that movie. Staying on that thread for Karen and I was our intent. And not many months after we finished that film, she sent me something called the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study that was co-authored by Dr. Robert Anda and Vincent Felitti. Basically, what it did is it got the health records to 17,000 people that were part of a Kaiser Permanente healthcare system in the San Diego area. And it looked at what their health outcomes were as adults, and it also laid that up against questions about what their childhood experiences were like. And as Dr. Ander has said many times, when the results came back, he assumed that there had been some wild mistake because what he saw was as more and more people sort of had difficult childhoods with things like abuse, sexual, physical, psychological, and neglect, mental illness in the home, violence in the neighborhood, missing parent, divorce, all those things. The more of those experiences that people had as children, the worse their health outcomes were later in life. And I'm not talking about the behavioral aspects of that. We all know that smoking, overeating, too much sex, too much food, too much alcohol, too much of these things that make us feel good in the short run hurt us in the long run. You take away all those things, you still see a dramatic impact on people's well-being who have had chronic, difficult life experiences. And so I, you know, called my producing partner back and said, whoa, this is extraordinary. And I think the reason I thought it was extraordinary is that it just felt like an opportunity, because you think about things like crime and poverty that are so entrenched. And if we just sit around and wait for crime and poverty to go away, we're missing an opportunity. For me, the opportunity is, how do you help people that are currently in this, in these challenging environments? So to that point, having then talked to Dr. Felitti about his work to get a deeper understanding, it wasn't long before he pointed me to Washington State, to Lincoln High School, way out on the eastern edge of Washington State, to a principal named Jim Sporleader, who had seen this information and decided to let that information guide how he taught as at-risk teens.
I want to set the scene for the film as it begins. And this is in the time before Jim, the principal there, starts this new approach. So what was – explain what Lincoln was like before 2010, because someone in the film describes it as a zoo. It was chaotic, sometimes violent, not unlike a lot of schools are dealing with in this country, I suppose.
Yes. You know, the teachers, many of the teachers at Lincoln are absolutely wonderful and committed teachers and were there during that time. Yeah. But I think what they lacked was an administrative framework about, you know, how to de-escalate these children. I mean, I think when Jim came in there, it's well known that, that basically the local gangs were running the school. And you really didn't have a chance to intervene. There's very little from the administrative side, very little interaction with students. There were fights. People were being routinely kicked out of school. There were arrests on campus. It was mayhem.
Let's talk a little bit about Jim Sporleader, because he's really critical, obviously, in your story. And I want to play a clip here, because he has this – he goes to this educational conference. You lay this out in the film back in 2010. And he has this epiphany about as you're talking about that, it's their brains. This is the thing we're not really taking into account. You'll hear a teacher in the background here, a teacher by the name of Eric Gordon, whom we'll get back to in just a moment. But here's a clip from Jamie Redford's film Paper Tigers.
And actually, I have a brain scan here on this next picture. Let me show you this. So here's two brains, okay?
In education, we're not supposed to say the kids, it's out of their control.
These are that part that I was
but the
about.
Neuroscience tells us that students that are coming to us with toxic stress, their home environments are so unpredictable that they're having to adjust constantly. And this is during critical brain development. That's what hit me, and it hit me really hard.
We'll get to what's going on in a young person's brain a little bit later in the program. But one of the – let's define our terms, Jamie Redford. Help us understand what – and the sort of critical term here is toxic stress. And this – people are – researchers are now starting to understand, as you lay out in the film, toxic stress is one of those key indicators in or elements of poverty and violence and disease. What is toxic stress? Give us a sense of that.
Well, it's an emergent term right now. And this field is so new that you really don't have an established vocabulary yet. And there, in my opinion, it's very hard. There are sort of pros and cons with the various terminologies that have been proposed to deal with this. But essentially, you know, stress is not 100% a bad thing. We all need a little stress to get things done in our life. You know, if you don't if you're not worried about the outcome of that test, if you're not worried about making it to your meeting on time, then you're going to be late and you're going to flunk the test.
Yeah.
So a little stress is actually good, and we can deal with that. Also, a sort of momentary, specific, unique experiences. Our bodies are very well designed to deal with a sudden surprise, a sudden stressor. Mm. The bear that jumps out of the woods.
Yeah.
All these biochemical things happen. Your adrenaline gushes. The cortisol coming out of your kidneys goes nuts. Your blood pressure goes sky high in anticipation of perhaps being wounded. Your pain perception drops dramatically in your brain. All these things happen in a moment of acute stress. And that's all wonderful for our survival, and it's probably what enabled us to evolve to the wonderful species we are now. But if that's happening every day, and maybe not at the level of a bear jumping out of the woods at you, but if you're in an environment where your home life is unstable, if there's abuse and neglect, instability, violence, any of these things on a regular basis, your body can't make the distinction between that not being a bear.
Mm.
So your physiological response day in, day out will take a physical toll on the way your brain functions and the way your body regulates itself hormonally. And too much cortisol, too much adrenaline chronically, it's really bad for you.
There's a remarkable scene early on in the film. One of the teachers I mentioned, Eric Gordon, he has a group of kids in his science class, and he's essentially explaining to them how this works, how their brains are being affected by what might be happening in their home lives. And he asks them this really interesting series of questions. He says, okay, think about this, guys. Do you have trouble controlling your emotions? Do you get super mad, maybe easier than other people? Do you get angry and then later realize you had just misunderstood? I mean, questions like, do you have frequent stomach aches and headaches? Do you get sick often? And what's interesting about this moment, I wanted you to talk a little bit about it, is the kind of dawning realization in some of those kids' minds that – and I think it was great because they're starting to realize, oh, something else is going on. I'm acting out. And they're starting to have this kind of realization. Would you talk about this moment? What's Eric trying to tell them? What's he explaining to these kids?
Well, you know, as I sat there and that remarkable moment was unfolding, I saw it as sort of the sort of superior neurological moment. Because these kids, because of all this stress, because of having to cope with the world in a state of high alert, fight or flight constantly, they process their experiences and their reality in a very primitive way in their brain, the part of the brain that's reactive, that's got to be functioning to deal with the immediate threat. They're not necessarily accessing that part of their brain, the frontal cortex and other parts of the brain that are better at reasoning and helping make decisions, delay gratification, delay impulses.
Yeah.
They're uniquely well set up to respond. And when he laid this all out to them, what I felt was going on in that room is these kids were releasing that primitive part of their brain and actually inhabiting that thought process that's actually very important for them to try and identify with moving forward.
Let me just play another excerpt from this moment. What he does is, Jamie, he asks them to, the kids, he says, okay, pick up your clickers. And he does this real-time sort of survey of them to give them a sense of their lives and to give them a sense of the real-time results of what's going on. I want to ask you a little bit about this, but let me just play this moment again from Jamie Redford's film, Paper Tigers.
Does everyone have their clickers? So on your clickers, click in how many of those, of the 10, how many would you say would be true for you? It's anonymous. Type, count how many of those are true, and punch that number and hit enter. There we go. Okay. So here we go. Look at this for a second. 13 of the 17 people in this room, this has been true of their experience growing up with at least five. Four of you were at 8 of these things that are true.
That's crazy.
What does that mean, you guys? What does that mean? This shows me that there's a lot of brains in here right now that are wired for survival and that might just maybe emotionally be a little on edge.
How are they reacting, these kids, when they learn their home experience is having this effect on their lives?
Well, I think this issue of just sort of understanding your own narrative and your own history. You know, does it make any of that go away? Does it fix the situation at home? No. But I think just having a deeper understanding of the why of things for anybody, regardless of whether or not they're in, you know, in a difficult, impoverished environment or not. Because, by the way, these 10 adverse childhood experiences in San Diego, those folks were largely upper middle class, well-educated, Caucasian population, the kind of profile that we would often assume didn't have these kinds of problems. That couldn't be further from the truth. ACEs affects everybody. And so when you have this understanding whether or not you're a kid at Lincoln High School or, you know, and a kid in a very wealthy neighborhood going to a very nice elite private school, the importance of just being self-aware and understanding that you didn't choose to be born into the situation that you're in where these terrible things may be happening, and understanding how they affect you just gives you a better self-knowledge of yourself, which will only encourage your ability to self-regulate moving forward.
How did you think about what the film would be? Because it seems like there were a number of approaches you could have taken. On one hand, you could have really dug in to the neuroscience. You could have really dug into the sort of differing, competing educational models that are going on out there. And others have done this. Your approach was very personal. It was just folk. You took six kids, profiled, and just told their personal experiences. How did you talk about the way you wanted to go about that and the decision you made to just make it very deeply, deeply personal?
Well, in full disclosure, I have done two films that sit in this world of the dangers of toxic stress. One of them will come out next year. And it does what you described in terms of really laying out the scientific basis. It's called Resilience, the biology of stress and the science of hope. And it's not coming out until next year for reasons I won't bore you with. But, you know, that was because I was overwhelmed by this. I was totally overwhelmed. The profundity of this information, it just almost paralyzed me. I wasn't sure how to deal with this topic. And in the end, my producer and I decided really to bifurcate that there is a need for a deeper understanding, particularly for professionals in law enforcement, teachers, pediatricians, social workers, administrators. They need to see this. They need to have a deeper understanding of the science. But honestly, on a broader sense, just getting people to connect and care to the value of providing compassion and love and the power of that, it just seemed like the personal route was the way to go. And that's why I made Paper Tigers the way I did.
You know, it seems like, let me ask you this before we head into a break. It seems like the thing that keeps coming back around is just how critical it is to have a caring adult in your life when you're a kid. All of those risk factors, as you say and lay out in the film, can be offset by the presence of just one person who says they love you, that, you know, that they care for you. I mean, that seems to be so critical here.
Yes. One of the things that surprised me when I got to Lincoln was how often people and teachers and admin said, "I love you," to the kids. And they mean it.
Yeah.
And they do. They care for them and they love them. And if you doubt the value of that simple thing, just look at their graduation rates. Just look at the GPA rates, which have shot way up in the last 4 years. Just look at the tardiness and the absentee rates, which have all dropped dramatically. And it's funny to think about all this science, toxic stress, this experience does this, this does this to your brain, this does this to your adrenal cortex, all that. But in the end, really, I'm just trying to provide a meaningful rationale for all of us to just show a little bit of compassion to these kids who so deserve it.
Yeah. Jamie Redford is with us. He directed the new documentary film Paper Tigers. We're screening it this Wednesday evening at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City. It's part of our Through the Lens series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Jamie's going to join us for a Q&A after the film. Seating for the show is limited, so we advise you, as always, to arrive early. We have details about all of this on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. We'll take a quick break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West. Okay, we are. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are continuing our documentary film series, and I hope you can join us on Wednesday night. We're going to be at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center screening the powerful film Paper Tigers. The director, Jamie Redford, is joining us today to talk about it. He profiles an alternative high school in Walla Walla, Washington. And the school has adopted a radical approach to dealing with troubled students. Rather than focus on judgment and discipline, they've built a program around what's going on in these kids' brains, most of them dealing with toxic stress from bad situations at home. Jamie Redford is joining us from a studio in Marin County, California, where he's based. And again, you can join us, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Let's talk about some of the teachers before we get to some of the students' stories. Eric Gordon. Tell us about Eric Gordon. He's one of those, as you said earlier, who regularly tells his kids he loves them.
Well, Eric is an enormously charismatic and powerful individual, and he just exudes a warmth and life, and he has an appetite for life that's just beautiful. He has a natural way of connecting with kids, and it's no accident he's chosen to teach in the environment that he does.
Yeah.
He actually likes the challenge of trying to make that difference for these kids who maybe historically have not had teachers that gave them that extra moment. And, you know, Eric, well, first want to tell you, he didn't particularly have a traumatic or difficult childhood. And in some ways, the solidity that he had with his family just increased his desire to sort of give back something of stability to kids that he saw had very little.
I like the element, too, where he says just briefly for a moment in the film that he came from an evangelical background, which I'm guessing, as you said, gave him a sort of solid foundation, but it also made him feel a little defiance. And in that sense, he can relate with these kids because a lot of them, all kids in general, you know, are kind of defiant. And I think that seemed like one of the things that he really connected with all of these kids was he got that idea of being rebellious because that was sort of part of who he was.
Well, you know, Eric's a big kid, and you know, he continues to be defiant. You know, he paints his toenails silver, wears sandals all year long.
Right.
His hair is in a constant state of alteration. You know, from one week to another, it was just wreaked havoc on the production of the film.
It just,
you know,
so did his beard, too, right? His beard was all over the
beard,
place,
the
too.
No beard, yeah. The handlebar mustache, yeah. the mop top, the shave, you know. And eventually it all worked out because he changed so often that his appearance just became a constant of change. And it somehow worked.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
Here's another moment from the film. This is in that earlier scenes that I was so drawn to. And this is a moment where he takes them through what's going on in their brains, and then he puts up on the board this question that says, "How are you going to be different?" And one of the girls in the classroom kind of bristles at the question, you know. And they're all kind of they're being kids at this point, you know. They're still he's not really convincing them necessarily at this point, and so they're not, you know. As this girl says, is you know, you'll hear, I'm not going to be different. I like who I am. But then he lays on the kind of the heavy part of this moment. Here's another scene from Paper Tigers.
I'm not going to be different. I like the person I am.
It's not what I'm going to ask.
They're like asking, like, you know, you don't want to be like your family is, you know?
Oh,
because,
that,
kind of different.
I'm already different.
Yeah, but check it out. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Because this is the part that's super heavy. Sometimes I don't want to even say because I think it's that heavy. You ready for heavy?
So ready.
20 years ago, those adults would have been sitting here in this room saying, I'm so different. There's no way I'm going to cause a life of stress for my kids. The cycle's going to stop with me. So how do you sit here now and say the same things they said and have it actually turn out different? All right, see you guys. Hey, you guys.
Yeah.
I love you guys.
I love you, Morgan.
Indeed.
This idea of cycle is an important one too. What? How did they react to that? I mean, because that was one thing that I think that just shut them down immediately. All of those kids, like, no one thinks they're going to be part of a cycle.
Yeah, I think it's humbling, and this business of intergenerational trauma is very real. Not only is it just the culture in a family that sets itself up to repeat itself. But now the emerging brain science is showing that there are literal genetic shifts that take place with children under toxic stress, and that these markers are transmitted to the next generation. In some ways, for me, that may be the most profound piece of information of all. And it just sets up just how hard it is to combat this, but you can.
Yeah.
You can offset this intergenerational trauma. It takes a lot of work, but in some ways, if you do that, if you break it there, then that's one whole, if you can think of it like a demon tree that grows up from a difficult experience, and by the time kids end up as adults, they're the ones that are being put in jail, in prison. They're the ones that are overdosing, doing drugs, basically – the profile of person we consider to be problematic in our society. So often the roots are there at the beginning. So if you can stop it, the sooner you stop it, the less that demon tree has a chance to branch out and create all of these profound impacts on our society.
Tell us about Brooke Bushy, another great character in the film.
Well, Brooke is a force of nature. She's highly intelligent. She says it like it is, and I've been on the receiving end of that a number of times. So, what you see is what you get, and she has had her own difficult journey in life. So she comes at what she does, which is, helping kids sort of stay in school, stay in line. And she does that all from the point of view of deep care and understanding. In some ways, you might think of her as the school disciplinarian, but that's not how she sees herself. She sees herself as an interventionist. And by the way, when you talk about discipline, it's not like there isn't accountability at Lincoln. Every kid that steps out of line, who disrupts the class or misses class too many times or says something inappropriate, they all have consequences.
Yeah.
The question is, how do they honor those consequences instead of kicking kids out of the home, out of the school? Where do you go when you get kicked out of school and you have no home life? You go somewhere where a bunch of other kids in the same situation are hanging out. And how are you spending your day instead of being in school? Most likely, you're going to be doing things that aren't good for you. And so in a way, this obsession we had in the 90s of expulsion, we were just guaranteeing this, school to prison pipeline. So what Brooke does is she coordinates with them to make sure that she understands and listens to truly what's going on, because very often the thing that caused the kid to throw a pencil across the room has something to do with the fact that one of the parents was arrested in the middle of the night for selling drugs, and they are on high alert. Now, does that kid get to skip discipline for throwing that pencil across the room? No. That kid goes and spends time in in-school suspension, in a quiet room where they're forced to think and collect and get their homework done. So they have to face the consequences of their behaviors. But they do it in a way that actually increases the chance that they're going to continue a forward trajectory rather than starting on a downward spiral.
Hmm. Let's talk about some of the students. Let's talk about Stephen, a really I keep using the word remarkable here. I'm just going to sound like a cliche, but he's such an amazing kid in many ways. And you can sort of see what I like about the trajectory of the film. You know, we see them over the course of a year, and we can sort of see it, where Stephen may be headed. And, you know, you worry about him. It's and there's the story early on where Jim Sporleader, the principal that we were talking about, he has this confrontation with Stephen. Stephen has brought a lighter to school. And I like this moment. I just wanted to play this. He's telling the story of Stephen finding out that there's something deeper going on. Let me just play this moment again from Jamie Redford's film Paper Tigers.
But I called his dad, and I said, I want him back in school tomorrow morning. He showed up. And what I had found out is his mother left town with no warning whatsoever. She just was gone, abandoned him. Had nothing to do with the lighter. So when he came in, I was able to say, my gosh, I heard about your mom. I'm so sorry.
He had a conference with my dad and I, Brooke. And they started to explain the little target thing that he has on his desk. You know, the green's whatever, like, you're okay. The yellow's like, you're kind of not in a great mood, so you'll be more likely to react negatively to a situation. The red's just like, you shouldn't be making any decision right now because you're too emotionally involved with the situation. Weird because it's one of the first times that like a principal had ever like actually spoken to me about something other than like punishment. After that, I don't know, he wasn't only a disciplined figure in my life, he was someone who was willing to allow me to talk to him if I had a problem bothering me or just to say hi, you know, like a friend sort of deal.
I don't want to, Jamie, give too much away about Stephen's story, so I won't. But one thing that is interesting, and this happens with a number of the kids, and I'm guessing this is sort of maybe a common denominator, is you get the sense that everything's going, oh, we figured this out now. Oh, it's his brain that's doing this, and so we just need to love him. Like that would completely be the magic bullet and that would solve everything. But as the film reveals, and Stephen's story is one of these, it's not how it works necessarily. I mean, they have these ups and downs and there's give and take and this back and forth. And that seems like another important theme in the film.
Yes. I mean, as a parent who survived raising teenagers, I think, you know, the general landscape is that, you know, hang on to your hat and fasten that seatbelt.
Right.
That's the teen years. And so we know that this is the case, that it's a time in life in which there's a tremendous amount of complexity, contradictory behavior, thinking. There's an enormous amount of growth taking place, and things are sort of all over the place. And then, you know, as they emerge into young adults, as my kids have, they both extraordinarily accomplished and centered people. I actually go to them for advice these days. And so, you know, that's a process that most people understand. Then you throw in this aspect of what toxic stress does to what's an otherwise normal period of turmoil. And it's just, you know, it just accelerates. It becomes exponential. And, you know, that there is no magic sort of potion or silver bullet that's going to guarantee full success all the time. I think what you're going to see, though, is that sometimes even if the immediate is challenging and you feel like, you know, that you're not making the progress that you would hope to make, that doesn't necessarily mean that in a year or two, that's all gone down very deeply, and in a year or two, it will be sitting there and forming some better choices. You just never know, and I think that commitment by these teachers to continue to support, no matter what's coming their way, is something that all of us can learn. You know, and I hear about the circle, the green, the yellow, and the red, and I'm sitting here listening back to my very own scene going, you know, I really got to take a page out of that book in my own life.
Right.
And, you know, another simple one, which is it's not about you. I mean, and in life in general, I think one of the primary problems we have understanding each other is our inability to put down our own personal mirror and make it not about you, but try to understand and listen. This is pretty simple stuff.
Yeah. So there are a couple of moments, I have to say, I thought the same thing, like things that lessons I could learn. Like when Brooke says once, she's talking about a kid named Aaron who we'll come back to, she says, you know, you can't just go up to a kid and tell them they're great. I mean, kids can read BS pretty well. She says you just have to start with eye contact, which I thought was really interesting. And then later in the film, a teacher by the name of Jeannie, she's another great character, she says, you know, sometimes you just have to say, look, I'm not going anywhere. Throughout the give and take, as you say, it really seems like really simple stuff. But when it plays out, as it does in this film, it really is affecting and pretty powerful stuff.
Yes, you know, and I think it's asking a lot. I think of teachers. Teachers right now, so often you hear about the problems of classroom size and how many responsibilities are falling on the shoulders of teachers to do more and more in a time when there are less and less resources. So the demands are big. In some ways, what I hope this film does for any teacher is make them realize, you know, the power of what they do. And when you take that 5 minutes to ask the kid how they're doing, or the 2 minutes even, you're actually potentially making a huge bit of difference. But it's hard. You know, we all know that when someone comes at you with negative behavior and negative words, it's pretty difficult to let it go by. But those guys, they have it down to a science.
Jamie Redford is with us. He directed the documentary film Paper Tigers. We're screening it Wednesday night at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City. We get started at 7 o'clock, but you should know that seating is limited, so you should arrive early. Jamie Redford will be on hand for a Q&A after the film, and you can get details about all of that on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. We'll take another break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we have with us the film director, Jamie Redford. We're talking about his documentary, Paper Tigers, which we're screening on Wednesday night. We have details on our website. We'll come back to that a little bit later on the program. The film is about an alternative high school in Walla Walla, Washington, and it follows six students over the course of a year. The school doesn't provide any easy answers to the questions of behavioral problems, but it does come at the problem with a different approach. Rather than ratcheting up discipline, it takes into account the effect of stress on these kids' brains and their ability to focus and learn and get along with others. As I said, the film is called Paper Tigers. Jamie Redford is joining us from Marin County, California, where he's based. I wanted to talk to you about – there's a terrific moment in the film and a great another one of the great stories is a kid by the name of Aaron. And this idea of art, the importance of art, it seems, in the scheme of things comes up. There's a teacher at Lincoln, Patrick Koffler. Is it Koffler? Is that how he pronounces his name?
Yes, Koffler.
Koffler, sorry, Patrick Koffler. And he there's this scene where students are playing music, and he talks about the importance of music. I wanted to play this and just talk to you generally, Jamie, about the importance of art more, you know, more broadly in the scheme of things. But let me play this moment Patrick Kofler talking about the importance of music in the way he teaches.
I love playing guitar with him. I love playing with several of these guys. I like the fact that we don't have to talk. That's the biggest piece, right? You know, the lack of talking, and then there's still that communication going on. I think that's huge. For some reason, I feel like that's almost as strong as anything we ever do in class. Academics is very important, but it falls in second to the person as a whole and like making a better human being. Tools just for, you know, getting along and being able to communicate how they feel and advocating for themselves and just all these little lessons and positive encouragement. You hope you have a good interaction with them on that Friday or a reason for them to get them to come back on Monday.
Jamie Redford, did this story give you any insights about the role of culture and art in educating kids, talking to kids, dealing with them?
Well, the ability to express yourself, it's so important for all of us. And you can only imagine that for kids who have a lot of pent-up feelings, experiences that are either mystifying or shameful or confusing, being able to express yourself becomes that much more important. And so if you honor that in this environment, as they do at Lincoln High School, you know, mind you, this high school is really strapped for resources.
Right.
Very often the teachers are buying things with their own money because it's not in the budget. Whether you need another, 20 pounds of clay or the guitar needs a new set of strings, there's nothing in the budget for that. But what they know is that it creates connectivity. And I would say just this as a musician myself. I play in a band called Olive and the Dirty Martinis. And we play out once a month around the Bay Area. We're a cover band. Why do I do that? I don't do it because I have harbor illusions of grandiosity as a rock star. I do it because of the connection with my fellow musicians and what it feels like to create together. So when I saw that scene in the classroom with the teachers playing music with the kids, I just thought, you guys are genius. Because I know firsthand that when you connect with people that way, it changes your understanding of them. It changes how you feel. The process of creating in itself, whether it's a paintbrush or you're playing a musical instrument, is enormously soothing. And so you put all that together. And, you've got thousands of alternative high schools in this country, and every one of them, I can guarantee you, is strapped for resources. And I would say that in these schools in particular, their social emotional health should be the priority because they're not going to learn and get, fantastic grades and be able to thrive outside of high school unless those core things are in place. And I think art is a critical tool for helping kids develop social and emotional health.
Here's a question that comes from Andrea in Ogden. She says, how do the families react to the idea that their child's problems stem from family trauma? It's one thing we don't necessarily get a sense of is that we see glimpses of some of their family lives. But do we know what the answer to that is? How do families react to that? Do we know?
Well, it's a really, really tough nut.
Yeah.
When I did the film called The Big Picture about dyslexia, what I had in that case was a very engaged family environment. Essentially, you had parents going, what am I going to do? My kid can't read. And so it was a very, very tight connection between the parents and the kids and the film and the story and everything we were trying to do, all the resources we were trying to provide that surrounded that film. In this case, you have a fundamentally different situation for many, many reasons. And most of them, as we talked about before, intergenerational struggles. The home life in some cases, is virtually non-existent. Some of these kids literally have no home. Where they sleep at night, it depends on who they're hanging out with that day, if they've managed to stay on good terms with them. And in some cases, young women feeling pressured to, you know, be in relationships so they can have a roof over their head. I mean, it's we're talking about a profound, you know, lack of familial structure. And then in many cases, when the parents were there, they were trying to survive their own travails, whether it be mental illness or real problems with drug abuse themselves. So the larger thing there is this absenteeism. And in some ways, you know, you hear a lot of people say, well, we can't really deal with educational issues unless we deal with this as a family issue. And from my point of view, I'm like, are you kidding me? This is a – we're in triage. Yeah. This is like – this is war, right? I mean, we have to be very specific about what we can actually accomplish and what's the most important thing. And so, you know, I found at the school that you know, that stability that these kids had was largely within the walls of that school. And, you know, therefore, the parents were just very much sort of in the background. And that's part of the reason that the problems are there in the first place.
There is an element, a moment in the film. I want to play another section here where – it's so interesting that these kids, they seem to be headed in a, you know, these teachers are trying to get them ready for college, or they want them anyway to contemplate going to college, and they're helping them, you know, fill out their, you know, the applications, all of that stuff. And then something happens. It's almost like they're trying to sabotage themselves. They melt down, and then there's this kind of guilt that kicks in, and it just shows how complicated all of this is. And then there's this there's this text exchange between Eric Gordon, whom we met earlier, the teacher, and Stephen, the young kid that we met earlier. And Stephen's really nasty to him, really mean to him. And Eric has gone out of his way to be helpful. What do you think is going on there? Because I want to play a section here in a moment about the toll this takes on the teachers.
I think you know, any comprehensive revision of how we understand how stress affects things has to include better tools for teachers. Yeah. Because if they are going to do this hard work and they are going to engage, they need protective help as well. Caregiver stress is one of the things that we really are starting to understand, whether it, you know, be your EMT, police officers, firefighters, soldiers, people that are constantly in high-stress situations. Teachers that care about these kids and work in these alternative high school environments are no different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, each one of them, the teachers I met, they all seem to have a unique way. Eric Gordon, how does he de-stress? Well, during the summer, he goes fights wildfires.
Wow. You know? Wow.
You know, and just kind of, you know, takes the edge off a little bit, goes out there and puts out fires.
Yeah,
so, you know, I think each teacher, some will travel, some on a daily basis have, you know, meditative practices or exercise, you name it. I mean, and it's hard. It's hard to manage all of that. But at the same time, Eric said something very interesting to me that I've said to other people around this issue of, wow, you're expecting a lot from these teachers to turn the other cheek on a daily basis. And he said, well, you know, I mean, honestly, I don't know about that because, you know, what's my choice? I get a message, a nasty message, and I get angry. And what happens when I'm angry? I get that adrenaline rush. I get the shakes. I get mad. I act out. And where does that get me?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't it kind of easier just to sort of show compassion and let it pass around you and through you and go on by rather than to become reactive and stressed out and angry yourself?
Yeah. We don't have time for the clip. Jeannie Hundeman is this another really terrific teacher. She just talks about She gets kind of emotional at this moment in the film, and people have to come see it on Wednesday to see. She just talks about it's something you have to work on. It's just, you know, you get so engaged in these kids' lives, and sometimes they disappoint you, but you have to stay at it. Let me ask you this finally, Jamie Redford. How it's an emerging, you know, bit of science, as you mentioned earlier, and this is a new program. Lincoln is just one of a handful of schools. Do you get a sense it's catching on? Or are you seeing more and more of this, people adopting these methods?
Oh, yes. And I really have to thank Karen Pritzker for that, my producing partner, because when she sent me this Adverse Childhood Experiences study 3 years ago, you know, I read it and realized, wow, it was written in 1991. There must be something wrong with this thing because, you know, it's 20 years old and it seems like there would have been a fundamental shift by now. But what I've come to understand is very often that when there is revelatory science that affects cultural issues, there is a lag. You know, it does take 20 years. And the good news on this topic is that I've seen this issue coming to light now increasingly. In the 3 years that I've started this journey with these two films, I've seen profound sort of, you know, evidence that this is increasingly becoming understood and embraced. For instance, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the largest pediatric society in the country, considers ACEs, these adverse childhood experiences, that's the acronym, and toxic stress, the number one health problem facing our children.
That's the film writer, director, producer Jamie Redford, directed the documentary film Paper Tigers, joined us today from a studio in Sausalito, California. Jamie, thanks very much, and we'll see you on Wednesday.
I look forward to it.
You can see Paper Tigers Wednesday night. We're screening it as part of our Through the Lens series, our collaboration with the Utah Film Center. Jamie, as I said, will be there. Seating is limited, so you should plan on arriving earlier. You can get details on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Elaine Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio.